Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, a weekly podcast where I walk you through some of the wildest, most unbelievable stories you'll hear from the world of real estate. If you like real estate and you love crazy, this is a podcast for you.
And welcome back to the podcast. I'm Lee Brown, and you're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. And today's crazy shit is coming to you right direct out of the southwestern part of the United States with some occasional detours in other areas. It's one of my favorite human beings, and you're going to love her too. This is Holly Mabry. Holly, thank you for coming on the show.
Are you kidding? I'm jazzed to be here.
See, because you're jazzed about life in general, which is another reason I love you all to pieces.
Ditto, sister.
So tell the world where you're located, what your lifetime is in real estate, any little tidbits they should have as background.
Okay, so I am just moments outside of Sedona. I like to affectionately call it Cottonwood, but most people don't know where Cottonwood is, so I just say Sedona. Born and raised, I'm a third-generation realtor and fourth-generation Arizonan. Been in the business 19 years, and there's no business better.
And I almost thought you were going to say there's no business like show business, and then you went to better, and it just threw me off for a second. But did you know there's a town in South Dakota named Cottonwood, and the sign on the highway says population 9? Did you know that?
I have not heard that.
These are the things you discover when your flight gets diverted to the wrong South Dakota city, and you drive across the state, and you see the town of Cottonwood with population 9, and then you tell me there's another Cottonwood outside of the crystal factory of the world in Sedona. And I think you need to go find your people in South Dakota.
Clearly. We left some of them on the immigration west. So,
but you didn't leave many of them.
No, apparently not. But we can go round them up. I think I've got a Suburban I have access to.
So. Maybe even just a minivan, because by the time you get there, it might be 8. Who knows?
That's right.
South Dakotans, we say this with love. We're totally making fun of you with love.
Okay, bad respect, so.
Anyway, you know the shtush of the podcast, which is exploring the world of real estate from the angle that is never exposed on HGTV. And I only have two rules, one of which is any language you use, frankly, is okay with me because you know I'm salty, but I don't use F-bombs, GDs, or see you next Tuesday because that's just too much for my sensibilities, frankly. And then, of course, if there are guilty people involved in the telling of any stories, please do not tell any real names. Just make something up. But you've been around the code of ethics block a million times. You know how that works.
Yes, ma'am.
So I can't wait to hear what story you have to tell from your lives, either as an instructor or a leader or a selling realtor, because you wear all the hats.
You know, I've gotten to do a lot of different things. But I think what is so fascinating to me is people think that real estate is so easy. Right. Even my mama, and this, I love my mama, right? I just got to sell my childhood home.
Oh, really?
When we grew up in. Yeah, it was crazy and it was hard and it was the right thing, you know, for mom and dad. But what was so crazy about it, Lee, is that was the first house that my mom had ever purchased. And it was her first sale ever.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Kind of so many layers there.
Yeah, it was a wonderful and very challenging transaction because, you know, working with family, that's always fun.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad's a real estate attorney. So just to
cream
on that. And so getting to do that with mama was fantastic. But what was so funny about it is I literally had to take a step back and explain agency to her because I was like, okay, mama, this is the deal. I cannot show buyers. And she goes, well, what do you mean? She goes, I want you to get the full commission. I said, no, I'm going to get paid, but I'm only going to represent you and dad, because if I represent a buyer, there is no judge on this planet who will think that I took care of you
right
at the same reasonable amount that I took care of that buyer.
Preach.
And she goes, well, yeah. And she's like, but I don't want to work with another agent. I'm like, oh. And so literally I had to walk through like how Pop can't represent two people
mm-hmm.
that are on opposing sides. And it was a fascinating, like, make me take a step back. But I have to do that with her all the time. You brought up HGTV a little bit ago, and she was like, I would go see her on Sunday mornings and have coffee before I'd go my showings and so forth. And she's like, okay, tell me about your day. Who are you going to go see? What's going to happen? And I was explaining this buyer and what we were looking at. And so I had coffee with her, went and met my buyer. It was our first initial, like, get to know you. What do you think you want to do? And then we circle back around. And I'm having coffee with my mama the next weekend. And she's like, so how'd it go? Did you sell something? And I said, oh, no, that was our first showing. She's like, but but okay. And I said, yeah, I'm going out with her again today. It'll be great. So we go out and now we're reeling, narrowing down. We've got the neighborhood. I feel really good. We're probably within one or two houses of what she's going to buy. So we're going back out the next day. And I go to dinner with my family that night and mom and dad pull me aside. And my mama looks at me. She goes, Holly, your dad and I want to talk to you. And this is like 2 years ago. She's like, we are a little concerned that the real estate thing is not going to work out. She's like, you've been out with the same buyer how many times? You've not sold anything. And what was fascinating is I had to check myself before I wrecked myself. So I'm looking at mom and I'm like, No. And so I realized in the background, every time I went over, HGTV House Hunters was on. She thought it was three and out every time. That's just how you work. I love my mom.
Those are the moments that change you as a realtor and also show why you are the best of the best, because we do get into our cruising lanes and put cruise control on and this is how we do it. And you fly through agency. Oh, I'll be working for you and somebody else is working for them. And we don't always slow down enough to hear mama say, but I don't want them, because we're moving so fast.
Oh, totally. And it was such a great like reminder for I need to make sure that everybody's on the same page, because I have a tendency to run really, really fast.
Mm-hmm.
It was just one of those things. So I'm grateful for my parents. They're still teaching me as I get older.
So sweet. They're worried that you're never going to sell anything. You poor inexperienced realtor.
Yeah, she's like, oh, this real estate thing's just not going to work out, Hall. We think you better get a different job.
Please don't tell anybody in the associations or the instructor world this, please.
When you're working with the public, there's always something different, right? And one of my first foreclosure listings, which I know are near and dear to your heart, I was so excited. It was a young agent. I get to go out and I roll up and it is this single wide trailer. It's like, well, I saw that too. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm meeting the locksmith out and we're getting close to the front door and it was actually just, you know, it was open. And so the locksmith and I are going in carefully and the smell, overwhelming.
Oh.
It's like these people had moved out and they had left everything they could possibly that was nasty and gross. And they had picked up from the neighbors and brought it in and just thrown it on the floor. And so we're wandering around and this mobile. And I looked at the locksmith and I said, what do you think? And he goes, I can't rekey this. And I said, well, what, is the smell too bad? And I'm thinking, oh my God, who am I going to get to clean this? And I can't secure it. And I'm going to lose my first, you know, RE low listing and what I'm going to do. And he goes, no, ma'am, there's no door. All right. Well, then we're not worried about anybody stealing anything else. And so, yeah, I had to go get a piece of plywood. I put in the door. It was awesome.
It does help with the trash out, though, because if there's no door, people could come carry off the leftover goods, which reduces the overall cost. But you don't know that on your first foreclosure property.
Yeah. And there were no goods. You say that very generously. There were no, it smelled like something had died. And I'm pretty sure there were a couple of, there might have been Jimmy Hoffa in there somewhere.
We won't judge, though. You know, there's no judgment here.
No.
But, you know, it is so interesting when you deal with foreclosures, because, you know, that's like my favorite. I don't even let my team do the foreclosures. They're mine and my administrative professionals who help me out with them. But you see some stuff in these foreclosures and you first off wonder what happened to these people in high school that turned them down this path. But then you're thinking you don't have a lot of sympathy for some people who go through foreclosure because they took stuff on themselves.
It's such a fine line. There were a number of people. You know, when you go and do cash for keys and you sit and you visit with them and it's like, you know, somebody just got down on their luck, health issue or whatever. And then other people were just complete jackasses.
Well, yeah, the good people, like you do, like me, I bet you call the bank and you're like, look, I know we offered them $800. Let's give them $1,200 because they could use it. And the bank will say yes when you're trying to help good people patch up what went wrong. But then that other side. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That other side. No, I get out. And I don't mean to be harsh, but it's just
I do because you see evidence of human trafficking and evidence of drug abuse and evidence of child abuse in these houses. And you want to know where those people are so you could turn them in, but you can't find them. So we see so much evidence and nothing you can do about it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I sold a house down in Central Phoenix and we went in. And again, it was another situation. It was a mobile home and I fell through the floor because they had cut holes in the floor to hide the drugs.
Well, they were not very good at drug dealing then.
They were terrible drug dealers, but it became one of those things where you pulled back the carpet and you could see where in this one room it looked like Swiss cheese in the floor. And the number of places I would walk into, I just, you know, you throw down. And we would be open carry because we didn't know what we were walking into.
And because it's good to be open carry, I feel better that way. But I will point out here, caveat to the world, we are not making fun of trailer houses. It just happened to be two stories in a row. Holly and I are both very proud to represent people, whether they're in a mobile house or a trailer house or regular stick built. We don't judge. It just happened this way.
No, absolutely. And it's one of those things where there's some great houses that happen to be manufactured or trailer houses. Bring it. Let's do it. Let's find you a great house. But yeah.
And it's honestly, it's one of the only affordable housing options out there right now.
It really is. Because you get into condos and now you're giving your life away to an HOA. But
which is going to be run by crazy neighbors. But you have to get on the board.
I will tell you. Okay. So I was vice president of my HOA 1 year. And I have never been through any kind of hell quite like that. Those people,
it's a special kind of hell.
Yes, they were not elected class president in the fourth grade. And as a result, they have held it as like a vendetta. And now they're in their 70s and they have got to be the boss of somebody. And by God, it's going to be you and your one weed in the front yard. And it is unbelievable.
And it's the phone calls at 10 o'clock at night, the 9:30 and 10 o'clock at night to fuss about somebody's tree is on my property. This should have bothered you in the daylight. Why are you calling me now?
Yeah, well, their light is on. That's my favorite. Yeah. It's like, you couldn't have called me, you know, yesterday. You had to call and wait for a Friday night at 9 o'clock. And, well, how long this has been going on? Oh, since Monday. You're calling me on a Friday night at 9 o'clock.
I was busy. And you're paid to do that. They think it's a paid position, too.
Oh, yes. It's kind of like real estate leadership. They think it's all paid. I'm here for the cookies.
You got cookies? You know? I'm still hungry from being at our conference last week. I didn't see any cookies. I think you're on the better committee.
You know what? We did not have cookies in our committee. I'm so sorry, but I will make sure that the next time you and I will have cookies.
We need snack baskets. Let's lobby for snack baskets for volunteers. That's all the payment I need is a snack basket.
Done. We can do this. We've got to know somebody.
So let's talk for a minute about your time in your career. So you came in as a, you know, generational realtor, just like I did, which I think is the best way to get into real estate, frankly, because you have access to a mentor who has to take your phone calls because you're going to pick out their nursing home one day, which is a really good tool to use. But then we move into leadership and we move into instructing. Did you expect to see yourself in either one of those roles when you became a realtor, or was it thrust upon you when you drank too much coffee one day and they elected you by acclamation?
It was one of those things. I came in at 23, Lee. I lived with my grandmother. Oh. I didn't know what an escrow meant. I didn't buy my first home until I had sold for about a year and a half. And so, you know, I was straight out of college.
Which is rare in and of itself, because commission jobs are hard enough for people with a backstop. But you did have grandma, so that helps.
I did have grandma, bless her heart. And so when I look back on it, like getting into leadership, somebody came up and they're like, hey, would you read the paper for us? I'm like, what does that mean? What do you want me to do? And like,
you're now the secretary.
Well, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I read the paper. Great. Well, would you read the paper and let us know if there's anything going on government affairs wise? Well, sure, I can read the paper. And that's what I did. And then it was like, oh, hey, y'all might want to know about this. This is happening at Cottonwood or Sedona or whatever. And people are like, oh, okay. And I just kind of continue to do it. And it's like, hey, you speak well. why don't you want to be on the board? Well, sure. I think I could do that. And I got on the board. I'm like, this is not running the way I thought it should be run. And you know how those things go, Lee. Mm-hmm. You open your mouth and it just kind of propels you in directions.
As long as you're willing to see it through and not get frustrated, because you and I both have a lot of stick-to-itiveness that many people don't have because their frustration levels get so high.
Well, I think that's the thing, is if you are going to do anything and do anything well, especially in a volunteer organization, that sense of collaboration has to be very, very high. I was a bit of a hothead when I was younger.
Preach.
Not that it went totally away, I know, but it's one of those things where
on the surface,
which is
how you just learn how to filter. That's all that is.
Well, yeah, my filter some days is better, but just ask some of my students in classes. especially if it's at the end of the day. And I know you've been there. So it becomes one of those things, that sense of collaboration. It's like, okay, how do we get to where we really want to be?
Right.
And how do you motivate people to get there? And sometimes it's knocking on back doors, and sometimes it's making, you know, conversation or meeting different people. And sometimes it's just going to the bar and breaking bread with them.
Yeah. If there's anything I could go back in my real estate career and change, it would be go back and take out some of the hot-headed things that I've said when I should have kept my mouth shut. Because I'm glad I'm passionate, but there's moments I wish I could go back and take back. But you can't do it, so you do a better job going forward, and you don't lose the passion, but you have to find a way to channel it differently. And maybe that's why I like to instruct, and why you like to instruct. We can channel what we know to be better into other people who haven't heard the message.
Absolutely. I was teaching LTA with Evan Fuchs earlier this year at our leadership training academy for the state of Arizona. And at one point I'm like, why are you guys here? What do you do for your members? And at that point, like, my frustration level after being locked in a room for a day and a half, seeing no sun, like I was over, and there was a metal like easel right behind me, and I turned around and I hit it. Oh yeah. I hit it with everything that I had. And it scared sweet Evan. It scared most of the room. And I was like, I need to know why you're here and what you do for your members. And then I thought, oh, that was the line. I crossed it and it's over. So, but they had me back, and that's good.
And I guarantee they all went and whispered amongst themselves about why they were there. And sometimes it takes that to break through the wall of adult defensiveness of don't show anything, don't be anything, just sit there and suck your way through it. And that's not what we're supposed to do in leadership.
No. And honestly, it's not what we're supposed to do in this business. Our clients deserve better. I mean, quite frankly, most agents suck at telling their clients why they show up.
Well, see,
if you hire
you
me,
made
I'm
that sentence too long.
Put in the yard.
Cut that sentence shorter. Most agents suck. And it's not just not the value proposition, but the why they suck is multi-pronged, because they were told in the workup to pre-licensure that it's what you said, put a sign in a yard and sell a house. List to last. You got to list to last. But we don't teach them the schematics of how to read numbers, how to spot what's happening in the market, how to make adjustments because they're pricing per square foot, which is going to be the death of me. We don't tell them how to advise a buyer in a repair negotiation without being a complete jackleg who makes the deal blow up when the buyer actually wants the house. We don't tell them how to look at profitability. We don't talk to them about being nice to each other and answering the phone. And you can't really blame the brokers. They're overwhelmed right now. They've got new people coming through the woodwork.
They've got new people coming through the woodwork, but they don't have the ability to bring them up. And so some other jackleg, as you say, kicks them up as a buyer's agent, or, you know, I'll mentor you for a certain percentage, and you get nothing but ego. And that's, I think, the thing that makes me crazy. And so as a result, people start to crowdsource, and they use great things like Facebook to tell them how to run their business. But that's all sound bites. And so they lean into clickbait articles, whether it's from Inman or, you know, whoever else it might be out there, that is not giving them the full story. And so now they're mad at their local association. They're mad at their broker. They're mad at NAR. Get over it. Get into the business and do the right thing. But now I'm getting all fired up.
Well, it's easy, though. I mean, you're talking about the problem with teams right now, but you were being nicer about it than I am, because there's a major problem with this team structure, which we have green agents that come into the business, jump onto a team because they are told they'll get education and mentoring. But instead, this team leader has 50 brand new licensees working for them, and they're just throwing them up against the wall to see who sticks. Nobody's got a clue as to who's working with the end user, consumer, and that person wants to call somebody. Who are they going to call? They've got a brand new agent that doesn't have anything to tell them. The team leader is some imaginary figurehead. They don't even know what brokerage you're affiliated with, because it's so obscure by these fake team names, and it's a mess. In fact, our state, North Carolina, we are advised that provisional brokers, which are the new licensees who haven't finished their post-licensing education, they shouldn't be on teams, because the team leaders aren't in supervisory capacity. But that's where they're landing, because they're all out there scooting through the loopholes without even thinking about the fact that every move they make reflects on you and me, because every realtor's behavior reflects on other realtors.
There's a disconnect there. There's a disconnect between the broker, the team leader, if there is one, and whoever else comes along. And that I've got a heart for these new agents coming in, because, man, all they're told is you've got to make as many phone calls as you possibly mm-hmm. can. And it's all about leads and leads and leads. And I said, no. It's about closing. It's about how many people you help on the back end mm-hmm. and you actually get the deal to the table and cross the finish line. It's not about how many races you right. start. And that is blows my mind, especially you get on some of these teams and it's like, oh yeah, I get 5 to 10 leads a day. And I'm like, great. How many of them are you converting? And they're like, oh, I sell one deal a month.
Right. Then you don't know how to ask questions of people. You're not listening to the end user.
Yeah. That math sucks. And so as a result, let's help get you over that hump. But they're too busy being pushed by their team leader of, hey, did you make all these phone calls today, without being told how to actually have a real human conversation to help the consumer, because the consumer doesn't know where to go. And so they're relying on, you know, bad information from a blog from somebody else's state.
And you do see why consumers gravitate to the Zillows of the world, because if they're running into this particular imaginary realtor we're talking about, who's just sitting there burning the phone up and doesn't really know what they're doing, I'd rather go to a website too. But then we haven't done a good job on this end of explaining to the consumer the difference between different kinds of realtors. And that's on us, that we haven't figured out how to say that there's a difference between the Holiday Inn Express realtor and the Crowne Plaza realtor.
As a consumer, I'll go look on websites. I'll start there. I want to get my choices, and then I want to talk to somebody that will guide me. And that, so I don't fault a consumer for that, but I do fault you and I, in the royal we, that is Lee, as far as all agents. Where I fault us is we are not connecting at that deeper level to assist a client in asking those right questions, getting to them to their goals, and helping them understand how their goals fit, what's happening with the market. Because they may want to buy a house for $100,000, but there's nothing that's livable for $100,000 in that marketplace.
Which means that the best realtors will say, all right, here's some solutions from a financing standpoint. Could I connect you to my investor client who can buy the house for you and work with you as a partner on it? That's what your best realtors will do, but you can't do that if you don't ask enough questions about what they're looking to buy in the first place. And we're not real good at asking questions. We're good at telling them the house we found instead of asking them whether it fits them.
There's that disconnect of actually understand what their long-term goal is. It's fascinating to me the number of people that maybe got in upside down during the dark times because nobody asked them, well, tell me, how are you going to support 10 rentals at this time?
You know, are we asking those questions right now, knowing that another recession is going to show up at some point? And that concerns
me. Not to the extent.
Right. Low inventory market, people stop asking questions and it's coming. And then
yeah, you're just hustling.
This cycle leads back to what we started off talking about with the foreclosure houses, which I don't necessarily fault the realtors who sold those houses unless the realtor specifically did not ask enough questions to protect that end user.
I think that's the thing, is understanding that what is your long-term goal and what is, you know, maybe what's your temporary goal, what is your long-term goal, and where are you headed in the next 10, 15 years? Because housing is a long-term investment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a 5-month investment. That's called a rental. And that's okay. But you and I, again, being the royal we have this really unique opportunity to help some people, especially because we know that real estate's cyclical and there will be an adjustment coming up.
Which is another reason that we have to make sure realtors are paying attention to legislation that's floating around, which is kind of driving me crazy that we've got this gigantic tax reform thing to the point where they're hustling it through because it's so full of bad pieces of legislation. And if we don't make sure that we're protecting property owners today, what does happen in a couple of years when the market suppresses and we've lost the homeownership benefits? I mean, that's going to be a storm of trouble if we're not proactive right now.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what, when you start to look at who we are and how we show up, we have tend to be reactionary in our businesses. We tend to be reactionary in our associations. But when it comes to advocacy and protecting everything going forward, I would rather climb the mountain today than fight the fire tomorrow.
Oh,
because the fire coming down the mountain, right? If the fire comes at you down the mountain, you got nothing. You got nowhere to go. And so as a result, I would rather climb the mountain today and take care of what I need to take care of instead of trying to put on my firefighter hat and rally people to come help me with a bucket brigade, because that's not going to work. And when you look at the legislation, and what's been so amazing to me, especially coming back from NAR, and since this bill has dropped, the number of agents throughout our membership nationwide who think, well, it's okay. I'm okay with lower taxes. And it's like, but read the bill. The analysis of the bill basically breaks down what this is going to do, including $1.5 trillion in debt. The math is there. This is not hard science. I know it's not, you know, 6 or 10% of whatever your commission might be. Of course, that's not antitrust, but I digress. And so as a result, man, you've got to know that this is going after much more than housing. This is going after people and the way they live and our institutions as far as what America was founded on, right? Manifest destiny. But now I'm going a little bit further and deeper.
But I got to say, too, though, because you're spot on. But when people say, well, it's OK for me, that's probably the remark that drives me the most crazy, because my personal situation might be that I'm washing with the tax plan. But my job as a realtor is to look out for everybody in my community. And if I see that this thing is going to disproportionately affect the homeowners who pay the property taxes and make the community run, I have to say something about it. It's not about me. It's about all of us. And there was an argument that was happening on LinkedIn that I, of course, waded into because I could not help myself. And that person was saying this is only designed to help California because they're expensive and to help D.C. and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, nah, dude, look at all the provisions involved. Every something in there is going to affect you today or tomorrow because there's no indices in this thing. People are going to have to stay put now because of cap gains. But this person just didn't want to hear it. Like, we're so self-centered, it breaks my heart.
Well, and it's one of those things where I waded into a very similar conversation on Facebook in one of the forums, actually in a couple of different places. I was blown away. People were upset because one of the ads said, are we a nation of renters? Who do we want to be, a nation of renters or a nation of homeowners? And literally, it was like, well, in Canada, we're just fine. And I said, I love that. I love that Canada is fine. But Canada has different rules than the U.S. And people start quoting European countries. And I'm like, yes, but that's a completely different market. When you look at the United States and how we're set up, this is very focused on housing. It's one of our main drivers, main engine. When you look at, there's usually 20 to 30 people involved in every sale that you do that they actually make money on. That's going to be, and usually realtors, we only think of ourselves and our broker, maybe the title company, the escrow, maybe an attorney, maybe the inspectors.
The carpet
and so forth.
Guy, the paint guy,
the carpet guy,
the handyman,
guy.
The fence
exactly.
guy. I mean, it goes on and on.
And then go further. I mean, I had a client who owned a flower shop, and when the market dipped during the dark times, he said, I went from working with 40 realtors every month to 2.
Ooh.
And that was a flower shop. And so when you start to look at how this impacts everything, it's like not just dropping a petal in a pond, but it is absolutely throwing a boulder in a puddle. And you are going to take all the water out. And people are saying, well, you don't understand how the free market works because, you know, this will open up more jobs.
How? No. Show me how this opens up jobs by taking people's money out of their pockets and adding to debt and giving it back to renters, which I don't mind people renting property. I was a renter at one time, too. But the actions of renters don't have a ripple effect inside the local economy like homeowners do.
It's amazing. I mean, I'm remodeling my bathroom right now, and the number of tradespeople that I've had in and out just on this little, you know, 8x10 square foot, you know, room has been substantial. And so you look at those types of things and what people do for homeownership, it makes a huge difference. And I will tell you, when many of my clients started holding on to their homes longer, my budget had to adjust. My business plan had to adjust. And so as a result, you play a longer game. But many agents are in for one and done today, and they're not going further. And that's the opportunity that's missed. But they need to stop being pissed at NAR for actually standing up for people on a national level and look at a little bit deeper what's going on in their community, how their community is impacted. Because when those people in their community, my friends with the flower shop, they had to move out of the neighborhood. They had to sell.
And this goes back to the education piece from earlier. If we'll do a better job of educating new realtors when they come in to exactly this conversation here, I think we'll have better advocates in our membership in the future. I've had several conversations with association leaders who say they don't want to talk about the advocacy piece to new realtors because they're not ready yet. They just paid a couple $1,000s to join and they don't have the money and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, if you don't talk to them right now, you lose the best opportunity you ever had. Because once they're out of our doors with their little MLS codes, it's so hard to get them back in the door. And that's why they don't understand what we're doing.
Well, it's very similar to when I go on a listing appointment and if all I spotlight is the fact that I put you in MLS and I'm going to put a sign in your yard. Oh, and I might have a flyer box. That'll be amazing. I don't talk to you about what I do in helping you negotiate the contract and helping you negotiate repairs and bird dogging the lender to make sure everything goes forward. And then also what I provide as far as services in working with the appraiser. Mm-hmm. Because all you're hung up on is, wow, that sold fast. All you had to do was put it in the multiple listing. I've missed an opportunity. And it's the same with associations working with new agents. If all you're telling them is this is how to log into the multiple listing, you've missed that opportunity to actually show them what you do for the long run.
Preach, preach, preach. Lord, we have run over my 15-minute limit, but it's so easy to talk to you because you're so smart and so engaged. And I know that all the listeners actually are going to stay with this because it's just so fantastic to, it's awesome. You're awesome. And the world needs to know who you are. And so when they need something in not just Sedona, but Cottonwood, Arizona, how can they reach the one and only Holly?
Well, you can reach out to me anytime. My website is azheartland.com or hollymabry.com. And you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. And I would love, if you need anything in Arizona, if you need to connect with an agent somewhere, I know agents in every town in this state, and I will hook you up and make sure you've got some great people to take care of your referrals and clients.
And you know she actually does, because this woman, y'all, was the president of the Arizona Realtors. What year was that? 12 or 14 or what?
2012, yeah.
So see, like a year ago. And so she does actually know everybody in the state, and she would never lead you wrong. So I know you're sweating to the oldies right now while you're listening, but never fear, because all of Holly's contact information will be in the show notes for this episode, so you can reach out to her anytime you need anything in Arizona, or if you're an association leader who's looking for an amazing presenter, instructor for leadership or actual regular training, she's pretty daggum awesome on that too, so she's got lots of hats, and they're all fantastic. Holly, thank you for being on the show today, and I appreciate your insight and your passion. You're a rock star.
Love you, Lee. Thank you for all you do for us.
And all of y'all that are listening, if you're a realtor, broker, investor, inspector, lender, or a normal person who's got your own real estate story to share, hit me up at Lee Brown on Twitter to be featured in a future episode or anywhere else on social media. And in the meantime, subscribe, and then we'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Crazy Shit in Real Estate podcast. If you liked what you heard, please visit crazyshitinrealestate.com, where you can access the full show notes for this episode, additional content produced exclusively for listeners, and much, much more.